Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to DAVE, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program on Health Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Join Dave and his guests now and every Tuesday at noon Pacific on Radio Star Worldwide as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day so you can live your caregiver life more fully and abundantly. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles, actually not from Los Angeles. I'm in Visalia, California. We're visiting my mother-in-law because she is a care receiver and her caregiver had some cataract surgery. So we're playing caregiver today. So I'm not in my usual studio. So hopefully the dog will be quiet and everything will work out fine and I'll sound all professional. So anyway, we are kind of in Los Angeles, kind of, not really. But a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Radio Star Worldwide Networks. Yes, folks, I am the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Sounds nasty, I know. It is. Anyway, we have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruber, cannot make it. She's from the caregiver space. She had a doctor appointment. Happens. But we will be interviewing Meg Curtis today, owner of Stonewall Farm Bed and Breakfast, Caregiver Respite Retreat, as well as Country Weddings and Function Center. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this amazing show. If you are new to the show, and we get many new listeners every week, especially since we've gone video, I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers, we know about three of them, is that they are caring, selfless, and sacrificial. Oh, yeah, and they do have this tiny little bad habit of burning out because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. So if you're like that, don't do that. You know, like the airlines always tells us, in the event of an emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask. And the airlines know this so well because they've seen it. If you don't put your needs above your loved one, then you will most likely black out and you won't be any good to anybody with anything. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it could have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through the grief process. Can't go around it, can't go over it, can't go in it, got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you feel like you're stuck. Hey, I want to thank last week's guest, Gary Barg, discussing how to be an empowered, fearless caregiver. Amazing guy. And just a reminder, you can hear that interview on our podcast at the following link on my website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregivers with an S, caregiver without an S.com. And while you're there, take our short quiz, see if you're a candidate for burnout. And just for doing that, I am going to send you a copy of my very first book in ebook format, absolutely free. What a deal. I know. Can't believe it. All right, enough of that. Meg. Do they call you Megan or Meg?
Meg.
Meg, like Meg Ryan. I like that. Well, welcome to the show, Megan. Thank you so much for agreeing to this interview today. I really appreciate it. Why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourself? Just who is Meg Curtis and what are you doing on my show?
Well, Meg Curtis is, I consider myself now powerful.
Wow.
Because I survived caregiving.
Survivor.
And I survived the grief. And if you can survive caregiving and grief, you've got it made.
Amen to that.
My husband and I purchased a bed and breakfast 19 years ago in a little town called Hillsborough, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Just 20, 25 miles west of Concord, New Hampshire, the state capital, and 25 miles east of Keene, New Hampshire.
Wait one second. We have a technical difficulty. You are in trial mode. You can record up to 5 minutes. Do you believe this? What do I have to do? Registered email. Continue trial. Continue. Will it let me... Okay, we'll see what happens. Okay. Just who is Meg Curtis?
Do I start all over again?
You do.
I do. I said Meg Curtis is a survivor of caregiving and grief. And if you can get through that, you're going to be a powerful person.
Awesome.
Everyone can empower themselves.
And is that the bed and breakfast behind you? I see that staircase going up.
No, I've got to be honest. The bed and breakfast was built in 1785, and they didn't build rustic staircases quite like that.
But, really?
That is in my partner's house, which is a nice lake house up here in New Hampshire. We go there to get our little respite in the middle of the week.
Awesome. So tell me, Meg, what brought you to this very special place of comforting caregivers and bringing them all of your wisdom?
Well, 10 years ago, my husband was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. He was in his late 50s, and it was not part of the retirement program that we'd planned on. It was quite a bit of a shock, as he was in perfect health otherwise, and it came out of the blue. We were not expecting it.
Oh.
And we decided that we had some choices, and we decided to keep our sense of humor.
That's a good choice.
And to go through this process with what I have nicknamed the monster Alzheimer, because it is a monster, Dave. We have no cure for it yet.
Huh.
And because of that, it's a monster, and we've all got to fight it. We've all got to do our best to advocate for this disease.
And your husband is gone, right?
Yes, he passed away 6 years ago. He
wow.
actually only made it for 4 short years.
So sorry to hear that. That's such a robber of our dignity. My yes, mother died of dementia just about a year ago. It's hard to believe. But very familiar. Been there, done that.
Yes.
But she is in a much better place now.
Yes.
Why you? What makes you uniquely suited to reaching out to caregivers? Is it just your empathy and the fact?
Oops. Hold on. Honey, we lost.
Sorry, I'm back.
Okay, is that you?
I accidentally hit my mute button. Don't do
all right.
that.
Okay. What brought me to this unique spot? What brought me to it was, first of all, after I lost my husband, after I went through that process, I realized that I had gained so much from going through this experience, and I had learned so much that I needed to help all of those that needed help. Now, since I was a little girl, I've wanted to help other people. So this isn't unusual for me from my heart to want to be there for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave it some great thought, and one day called a dear doctor friend of mine, Dr. Bob Stern out of Boston University, and I said, I have a brilliant idea. If I do say so myself, I said, how about if the bed and breakfast were to be a caregiver's respite retreat? He couldn't say enough about the idea.
Wow.
And they had dubbed it the first one in the United States because one of the local newscasters from ABC Googled it, and she said, well, I can't find another caregiver's respite. And I said, what a wonderful thing to do. What a wonderful thing to offer. A place for that caregiver to come away where they're not in the midst of the chaos that their daily lives have become or the routine. If they would like to sleep late, they can. If they want to take a nap, they can. If they would like to read a book, if they'd like to sit on the deck and do nothing, they can. But we also have, we offer a support group, and I tell everyone, I don't care if it's one person that I'm supporting or 15 of you. I'm there to support you in every way that I can. We also offer massage and Reiki, whatever our needs are for those very, very special people that we call caregivers.
What is Reiki?
Reiki. That's a hands, some usually I believe it's no touch massage.
Really?
But it's healing, but it does great healing.
Awesome.
We have wonderful Reiki masters in the on the East Coast.
So how's this working out for you? I mean, how many caregivers, how long ago did you open, and how many caregivers do you think have visited your place?
I can't even tell you how many have come.
Really?
But, certainly enjoy their stays.
And so, and they leave a different person, all
they
rejuvenated.
Do. They do. They said, when can I come back? And I said, whenever you're ready. And they said, right now. But at least they're rejuvenated a bit.
So what's the average length of stay?
Generally, due to the fact that they have time constraints on them because they have to find a caregiver for their loved one, they usually only stay a couple of days.
Oh.
But I did have a woman that came, and she stayed for a week. And she said, her parting words to me were, I feel like a human being again.
Oh. You know, respite is so important to caregivers. You get into this rut. You don't realize that it's been, you know, weeks, maybe even months before you've had, since you've had dinner with a friend, since you've, you know, gone to your workout regimen. Oh, I got it. Every now and then a word just escapes me and
uh-oh.
I was like,
uh-oh.
God. Yeah, so I do the crossword puzzles. You know, my mother died of dementia, so I don't want to go there. I do everything that I can. I do this radio show, and I even volunteered for a early Alzheimer's dementia study that sees me every 6 months, and they ask me all these questions, trying to get to early diagnosis. And so far, I'm not great, but I'm doing, you know, my memory. I'm talking about. They said I'm about average for a guy my age. I'm 62, but. The good news is I'm not getting any worse, so that's good.
Right. Well,
I've got to take care of my wife.
Hats off to you, because we need all of the folks possible to take part in these studies that are being held all over the United
States.
They're
free. And
they don't cost a thing.
Don't you want to know if you're going down that path, there's things you can do, early detection. You
and,
know,
to help others. That's why my husband took part in so many studies.
Oh, good.
Because
good.
He felt he wanted to help other people.
Awesome. So business is good.
Business is good. And it's been hot, hot, hot back east.
So is it mostly the caregivers or mostly the weddings or mostly the functions or all about equal?
I think everything is just all melded into one thing. There it's all about equal. Some days you get more caregivers and some days you would get, you know, some weekends, more weddings. It just depends.
So you're kind of like Lorelai Gilmore on the Gilmore Girls. You're running an inn there, and you just have all sorts of – you could probably do your own reality show.
Oh, I could. You know, we have just a very few farm animals. You know, we cook trying to use as much as we can from our farm. And so we have chickens. And you would be amazed at the number of people that come – that have never seen a chicken up close or held a warm chicken egg in their hand.
That would be me as well.
Well, we need
I'd love to come to New Hampshire, but on the other side of the country.
Yes.
So I have to wait till that trip to New York, then maybe we'll hook
and then
up.
You better travel up.
So you've gotten all this wisdom from being a caregiver and from running a place and watching caregivers rejuvenate. What three words of advice would you give to the caregiver whose loved one just became disabled?
I have to say that the very first thing I would say is find a sense of humor. If you have to look underneath the table for it, do so. But find a sense of humor. Look at everything with humor. Because if you can just laugh about it and laugh together, it's going to help everyone around you. And it's going to make this journey a lot easier.
Amen to that.
And I think that the next thing would be human touch. I am a great proponent of human touch. My husband and I continued to do enormous hugging right up to the end. And if I was having a bad day, I would say, I need a hug. And he was always prepared with one. And he did not have to voice it. I would just hug him. To me, it's a very easy human thing to do. For others, it's a little more difficult. But do it. Put your hand on their shoulder. Say, I love you. Because they're still the same person to you. Even if they get to a point where they cannot process anymore, they're still the same person they've always been to you as a caregiver.
Yeah. And, of course, you're talking about Alzheimer's now.
Yes.
How far did his disease progress to? Did he know you?
No. He did not know me. However, I was one of those caregivers that I was positive that he knew who I was. And I'll be very honest that one day, this is a little off the charts as a description, but it's the first time that I realized he did not know who I was. And I was about to get ready to put him into the shower in the morning. And I thought, well, why not expedite this whole process? I'll just go in and pop into the shower and take one with him while I assist him without getting my clothes all wet.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that. And all of a sudden I looked at him and I said, do you know who I am? And he very sweetly replied, no, I don't.
Wow.
And then it dawned on me, he didn't know that we were male, female. He didn't know we were naked. He didn't know my name. He didn't know his name. He didn't know anything except he didn't know he was taking a shower. I was giving him a shower, but he couldn't say those words.
Wow.
Everything you assume that they know isn't necessarily so. So that was my reality check. And I shed quite a few tears after that.
I guess so.
But our relationship never changed. I still treated him with the love and the respect and the dignity that we had always had in our marriage.
Good for you. So when a caregiver checks into your bed and breakfast, what can they expect?
Well, generally, they can expect lots of loving, lots of just old-fashioned compassion. My partner, Ed, is working closely with me now, and we ask if there's anything that they would like, go get settled in their room, come on down. They can have a cup of tea or iced tea or lemonade, whatever they would like. But we like them to spend some time outside walking, breathing the fresh air, reconnecting. And one day I went out and a woman was sitting on the deck staring into space. And she said, wow, this is silence. This is wonderful. This is peaceful. This is tranquil. She felt like she had reconnected. And she told me later that it took her a full day to get used to the idea that she didn't have to check to see what time it was, to see if she had to prepare a meal for someone or to check on them or to have them behind her every single second. She said, I was all alone, and what a wonderful feeling it was, because she could relax. She could just relax her body and her mind.
Wow.
That's what they can expect, that kind of a feel. I personally believe that Stonewall Farm is a very magical place. People that are the highest strung people you've ever seen in your lifetimes come in there and they leave relaxed. So I don't know. Maybe it's the granite. Maybe it's the fresh air. Maybe it's the clear skies, the stars. I don't know.
Well, awesome. Well, listen, we're going to take our first break, so don't go away. We will be right back.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them. Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and tune into Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver radio program on Radio Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. With roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, it's about one-third of the population. That means everybody probably knows somebody caring for a loved one. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Mothers of special needs children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, the list goes on. Join Dave and his guests every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific on Radio Star Worldwide as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. You'll start feeling better in no time as you begin to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help you get through the day and to live life more fully and abundantly.
And we're back with Meg Curtis. Meg has a bed and breakfast in New Hampshire, and she caters it to caregivers who just need a respite, just need to get away. Let me find my questions here. I'm all discombobulated. I know you have some, Meg, because everyone does. Share some funny caregiving moments that you've gone through that are just, you know, reality show stuff.
That is so true. I can give you an example of that, that you look back and it was pretty humorous. As many caregivers, the other thing, you don't want to give up on that person you're taking care of. So you push them to the limit. And I used to think, of course he could still paint the side of the house. Not. He's walking around, he seems perfectly able, and I kept saying, honey, why don't you go get a ladder to paint the house? Well, finally, it took him about 2 weeks to get him to find the ladder and to put the ladder up. And the next thing I knew, he was on the ladder, and a gallon of paint was on the front of the bottom of the house on the granite foundation, and the other half was on him.
Oh, no.
I looked back and I thought, that's what happens, caregivers, when you push them too far beyond. So all I could do at that moment was laugh. And he started to laugh and he didn't feel so badly about it. And I think that's the most important thing, is to make them feel like they didn't do such a horrible thing. And the other thing that, I guess it wasn't too humorous at the moment that it happened, but back east, we have in our little towns what we call the dump, the town dump. Now, what that means to West Coast folks, that's your trash people. That's your recycle center. But here, we do it ourselves. We don't enlist the help of the big garbage trucks and all. You put it into the back of your car and off you go. So this one day, I said, honey, we're going to go to the dump today. So how would you like to go and put all the trash in the back of the car, in the back of the Jeep? And he looked at me and nodded his head and said, yes. And as quickly as he left, he came back in and he was just standing there looking at me. Now, the reason he was looking at me was because he did not have the words to put together as to what the dilemma was. But fortunately, after all those years of marriage, almost 43 years of marriage, we'd learned to read one another. And I said, oh, the car keys, the car is locked. And he nodded his head yes. So I tossed him the car keys and said, I'll be out there in 1 minute. And I swear it wasn't more than 2 minutes. I got out there. The car is gone. I don't hear
oh
you.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. The car was gone. The trash was gone. So I had to call the police department and say, my husband is on his way to the dump. He'll be passing by your station. Could you waylay him? He has Alzheimer's. And he's really bad shape with Alzheimer's. And so I got a neighbor to take me down. And we pulled into the police station where my car was. And he was sitting in the driver's seat with a great big grin on his face. And there was a police officer talking to him. And I said to the police officer, so how was your little conversation here? He said, oh, is that what you call it? And I said, yes, welcome to the world of Alzheimer's. And so I opened the door and I said to my husband, sweetie, how'd you like to get out and go around and sit on the other side? And just like a good child, he got out and went right around to the passenger side. And I got back in the car and I looked at him and I said, so have we been a very bad boy today? And he started to grin like a child that had just pulled one over on his mother. It was really funny. What wasn't funny is the fact that he was on a major highway to get there. And he knew how to get there. No one can explain how he would remember how to get there because it was about 4 miles away.
Wow.
And that he got there without moving over the solid line or any such fiasco. And believe it or not, it was 2.5 weeks later that he passed away. So that was the stage he was at.
Okay. Well, that's an amazing story. I bet you got a million of them.
Yes. I would like to say one thing about why I took care of my husband at home, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
When he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, I said, okay, and we had the kids all come over. We have 3 grown children. Mm-hmm. They all came over, and I said, your father has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. And, of course, everyone in the room was crying. And I said, and I plan on taking care of him right here. Well, there were all kinds of objections. How could I possibly do that? And this is very common for many families.
Really?
Because how do you do it? I was able to for a couple of reasons. One was I was in a setting where I did not have to go and ask my boss, could I please have the next 5 years off to do caregiving? I was my own boss and the owner of the bed and breakfast. I did have to give up a real estate career because I couldn't do that and take care of him. And I was his only caregiver. Hmm. And the other huge reason, we have our separate quarters at the inn. So he was able to be contained, and at night everything was locked down so that he could not get out and wander. And the area that we have was Alzheimer's friendly. There was no way that he could get hurt on anything. And the last reason that I could take care of him, and I want to emphasize this, is he was always a very kind and gentle soul. I was very lucky that he remained that way until the end. He was always kind and gentle. I did not have a problem with aggression.
Very fortunate.
Yes, I count that as a huge blessing. I want to tell people that all the people out there that are battling this, it is not the end of the world or the worst thing to have to place your loved one in a caregiving, a memory care facility.
Yeah.
Because you have picked out a memory care facility because it's the loving thing to do. You want your family member to be well taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Situation where you can't do it. So I don't want any guilt trips because of it.
So what do you say to these caregivers who maybe inappropriately made promises to their loved one when they were normal and said, don't worry, I will never put you in a facility or a nursing home or one of those places. And now they're stuck with this guilt. What do they do?
They're going to have to put themselves into their loved one's head and realize that they aren't going to know that that's not their home anymore.
Good point.
They will not know that that's not the familiar wallpaper on the wall.
Yeah, but even that won't stop some people who are so riddled by guilt.
I know.
You know, some people, I think of Fred Sanford in Sanford and Son, right? Every time he wanted to get his son to do something, he'd grab his heart and say, Elizabeth, coming for you, honey.
Yes.
And forget it. Yes. Lamont was just, you know, his slave.
Yes, yes. No, I know. It's a very, very tough thing to wrestle with. But I have to say that let it go the easiest that you can. And I think the other thing I'm going to suggest is to get grief counseling. You're grieving the loss of that person before they have passed away.
Anticipatory grief.
That's correct.
I found out about that.
Yes, yes. And I had a wonderful woman that was a grief counselor, and it was so soothing to be able to talk to someone each week about what you were going through and to know that everything was going to be okay, regardless of any decision that I made.
So do you, like, address caregivers? Do you have, like, times where you speak to – do you have them more than one there at a time?
Yes, yes.
So what do you talk about when you address them?
We don't have any official addressing. I think I try to tell my personal story, and they start nodding their heads when something familiar is talked about. And then I'll say, what's your experience with this thus far? What point are you at? What problems have you gotten into that you're not quite sure how to resolve these issues? What is it that we can help you with? And they're bound to come up with 95 different things.
So what are the most common that you've heard that they need help with?
Getting a respite. Arrest, arrest, arrest. That's what they need. They are so tired and so burned out.
And you get the lucky ones, because I hear all the time, I can't get away. I've got no help. You know, they've got siblings and they don't even come by to see how I'm doing. And
right.
Nobody appreciates what I do. And I'm just trapped here in prison. And it just goes on and on and on.
Yes.
I don't know if you've heard these comments before.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. All too familiar.
So what do we tell these people who insist that there's just absolutely no way they can get away? They got no help. I just think they're not being creative enough. I don't know. That's just my opinion.
No, actually, that's very true.
Where there's a will, there's a way. Is that true?
There's a will, there's a way. And I know that out this way, we have facilities that do take your loved one in for a short respite so that you can go away.
Mm.
And this happened with my husband. One of my sons wanted to take me to Florida with he and his wife and his little girl. And I said, well, I can't go. And he said, well, I've already talked. He talked to his twin brother. And they made arrangements that we would put their dad into a respite situation for 2 days. And then my son would come up and pick him up at the respite and bring him back home and take care of him himself. So where there's a will, there's a way. And there are respite facilities available.
What do they cost, typically?
That's difficult to say, but because in our situation at that particular time, my husband for the last year was under hospice care, and it was covered.
Sometimes if you're in, if you're a veteran, something is covered.
Absolutely.
Or if you're the spouse of a veteran, something's covered.
Yes.
Or if you qualify for Medicaid.
Yes.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are so many programs out there. Sometimes the county has a program.
Yes.
Sometimes the state has a program.
Yes. And I would also encourage daycare facilities.
senior centers, local senior centers have daycare, like, and a lot of times it's free, sometimes it's not, but it's very, very affordable.
Yes, it is. It's very affordable.
So hopefully people are getting some great ideas just from us talking here.
Yes. I do know that here in the Northeast, daycare facilities for memory loss are few and far between. We need more. Hmm. We need so many more because I had to travel. It was 25 miles to the nearest daycare facility.
Wow.
And it was Dr. Stern that finally insisted that my husband was ready. I said, no, he's not. Because I was on the inside. I was on the inside.
Ready for what?
He's ready to go to a daycare. It would give you a break. It would give you a day to either do nothing or do your shopping, whatever you need.
So why were you resistant to that?
Because I didn't think he was bad enough, if you'll take that word, bad enough. To go to
and you didn't deserve a rest.
I guess not, because I never put myself, you know what that's like. You don't put yourself first. Yes. And I felt that he just wasn't in a bad enough shape, and I was absolutely wrong. And Bob said, you're either going to do it or I'll do it for you, but it's going to happen. Because he said caregivers get burned out, they get sick. Sometimes they can die before their loved one. Only because of the stress.
Sometimes they get sicker than the person they're caring for.
That's correct. And so we went. I went with a friend and viewed a couple of the different places. And this one I was taken with because I thought they had a tremendous amount of love and compassion. The whole staff was smiling. They were friendly. You can feel it.
Wow.
It goes for that. And actually, anyone that gets this information, it's the Keene. It's in Keene, New Hampshire, and it's called the Castle Center. And they have more love in that facility than I've ever seen. So then I decided I would take my husband there for lunch. So I took him for lunch, and as we looked around the dining room, I said, "Sweetie, I think they could use your help here." And he said, "I guess so. Look at all the old people." And I said, would you like to start coming here to help? Oh, yes. He wanted to come there to help.
Awesome.
So 3 days a week, he picked up his L.L. Bean bag and packed his most precious belongings in them, and off he went. But the reason that it was easy, not only did he know he was going to work, they enlisted him to help set up tables or chairs. So he was useful.
Yeah.
He always felt he was useful. And then I had a marvelous neighbor. And his name is Ken.
Well, hold that thought, and we will get back to that. But it sounds like the real bottom line here is that you got a break.
Yes, I did.
Okay. Don't go away. We'll be back in 2 minutes, and hold that thought. Thank you.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is a touching story about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resembled that of both a Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. She met her husband Dave 21 years earlier. They had a wonderful fairy tale storybook-like courtship that soon culminated in their marriage. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought them all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, their love then produced Rebecca. They all had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive. To survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone that meets her. Best-selling author Lynn Barrington says, "If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story from the heart. It is inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light." 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch, says, "Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror." As the Bible states, you will be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Order your copy today from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com. And Dave and Charlene will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back. And that was my lovely wife, Charlene, we were talking about. She hasn't spoken in 20 years in full sentences. She can say a handful of things, like my name and yes and no. And she can say no like 150,000 different ways. But go ahead and finish your thought. And then I want to talk about when it's time to take the car keys away.
All righty. our neighbor Ken came down for dinner one evening, and I was telling him that Skip was going to be started at this daycare, and I was going to have to drive about 28 miles each way every day, and it's about a 40-minute trip. And he said, "Well, wait a minute." He said, "I go to Keene every day to go to work. How would it be if I picked him up at 7:15 in the morning and I brought him back between 5:30 and 6 o'clock every evening?"
Wow, where was he taking him?
To Keene, New Hampshire, to daycare.
Oh.
So he did the transportation for
Lucky
2 years.
You.
Yes, it was. It was one of those wonderful moments. It really was.
Yeah. Okay, so I assume he used to drive at one point, and I assume you decided this man should not be driving. Tell us about that and what you did about it.
This is one of my hot spots with caregivers. They said, "Well, they want to keep driving." And I said, "I don't understand that." And here again, Dave, between you and me, it's all about being creative. And I think what people have to understand is you don't want to be responsible for the loss of another person's life just because your loved one wanted to still drive when they were impaired by their brain not operating and functioning properly.
And just because you're not very good at confrontation.
Right. Yes, because you don't like to do any confrontation. So I decided, because I had been noticing when he would drive, and you will find this, that the Alzheimer's patient tends to pull the car towards the right. So we were constantly almost in the ditch all of the time. And one day I'd made up my mind this wasn't going to happen again. So I got into the, came out to the car on a Father's Day, and I said, "Honey, have I got a gift for you?" And he looked at me and he said, "What would that be?" And I said, "I am going to be your personal chauffeur for the rest of your life."
Wow. So that's, I'd like that.
That means we can stop at Dunkin' Donuts, get you a huge coffee, and you can tell me what's beside the road and ahead, and you can tell me when the road is clear. Well, you don't, in the end, you don't take their word for it that there's no cars coming, because there could be. But do you know, he just jumped into that passenger side of the car and he never talked again about driving a car until those 2 weeks before he died, when he took off with the car.
Wow. Before. That's very creative.
So
I had another guest on the show, and what she did that was creative, she changed his key to a key that didn't work.
Yes.
And he always liked to shake him around in his pocket. He never drove, but he knew he had him.
Yeah.
And she knew that he would never be able to start that car.
That's correct. And I've heard of other people. I've heard of other people that have gone to the lengths of disabling the car so that it won't start. But you do what you have to do, because you see all of these newscasts with people that have crashed through a plate glass window or banged into a bridge or just mowed down half a dozen people. Most of them are elderly people, and I'm not picking on elderly because I'm there myself, but
yeah, all my children think I shouldn't be driving.
I know, that isn't that true?
When did we stop becoming the critic of their driving and they became the critic of our driving?
Oh, boy, it's bad, bad.
I seem to remember all those accidents at 16 that they had, you know.
Yeah. you know, I have another funny story to tell you about a caregiver that came to our facility. And it was interesting. I gave out a two-night stay as a prize at some Alzheimer's to do. And I made it pretty clear, I thought, that the caregiver's respite was for the caregiver. Well, the next thing I know, they arrived on our doorstep, and we spent the whole 2 days. We realized that there was one that was a caregiver, and then they had brought the patient, the one they were caring for, with them. But we couldn't figure out which one was which.
Why not?
And we've never found out who was who.
They were both a little dingy, huh?
Yes, they were. Hate to say it.
I know a couple like that, too. I won't say who it is because they might find out and then I'd get in trouble.
Yeah, but we don't know.
One was like right behind the other one by
yes.
only a few months. Well.
So, caregiving.
How has caregiving changed your life? It sounds like it has changed your life for the better, for the worse, for whatever.
It's changed my life for the better because I get to help so many more people now. I've become very involved with Boston University and with Dr. Robert Stern, who's the clinical core director of the Alzheimer's unit at Boston University. Uh-huh. He has been my mentor, my teacher, my friend. Everything I know about Alzheimer's, I know because of him. We do a lot of speaking engagements together.
Wow.
We do a lot of education.
When did you know you were a professional speaker?
I guess when I was 17 years old, and that's when I first started. I did a short thing when I was in high school. I was in the church, and I was the president of the youth fellowship, and they said that the president had to do the youth Sunday sermon. That was back in the 60s. Well, you can guess what my subject was. We shall overcome. And
you were an activist.
Yes, I was. So, and now I'm an activist when it comes to Alzheimer's and the monster.
Good for you.
And
we need them.
Everything we can. Dr. Stern, when he introduces me at events, he said, "And here is the biggest slayer of monsters that you'll ever find."
And tell me why you call it the monster.
I call it the monster because what it does is slowly, slowly, minute by minute, day by day, takes away your mind, your ability to function as you want to function, your ability to think as you'd like to think, your ability to speak, and eventually it takes away your life.
It's kind of like termites. They're just constantly...
It's constantly at your brain, and that's all I can think of are all these plaques and tangles just in a monstrous, almost like in a horror show, just taking over your brain. And that's what it does. So I think it deserves the name monster. It's a monster disease for the person that has it and for the people that surround them.
So how do we slay the monster?
Well, I will tell you one thing. What you have been doing with taking part in studies, I want to encourage everyone to take part in any kind of study, and their loved ones to take part in the studies at all their local universities. That's the only way we're going to get anywhere. And, of course, there's another thing called research. And as you know, the funding for research is not where it should be. And quite frankly, before my husband passed, I did start up a fund at Boston University. And it's in his name. It's called the Skip Curtis Fund, and it goes 100% strictly for Alzheimer's research, not a nickel, not a dime, not a penny goes to any administrative functions. It all goes into research. That's how much I feel and Boston University feels that we should be researching.
So it's not like the Clinton Foundation where 10% goes out and 90% goes to administrative fees.
No.
Oh, did I say that out loud? I'm so sorry.
Yes, you did, but that's okay.
I don't want to be political. I'm sorry.
No, we won't be political. No, it's just a matter of any huge organization, you see gazillions of dollars going in directions other than where they're meant to go.
Sure. Even good organizations like the Red Cross, you know, and
right.
they're a good one, but, you know, they've got a big chunk that
right.
has to run the machine, you know.
Right. So I thought in my own small little way, in my own small little world, I could create this and do our part in my husband's name to further that research at this particular university that has treated him with such love and respect when he was doing all of the different studies that he was involved in. He was in some pretty, a lot of very, very difficult studies.
Well, I don't believe the hour has gone so quickly. Why don't you tell us how we can get a hold of you? Number one, if maybe we want to go to New Hampshire and take a respite, or if we just want to pick your brain for your wisdom, you have a website, you have email. How do we get a hold of you?
I do. Our website is www.stonewallfarmb&b, you have to spell the and out, bedandbreakfast-countryweddings. It's a long one.
You know what, you need to do what I did, pick a short domain and then forward it to that one. And that, so my short version is dnas.com, and that'll get you to my website.
I have a shorter one that's Stonewall Farm Bed and Breakfast. And then my email is stonewallfarm@gmail.com.
Got it.
So
awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We could have spoken for another hour.
Yes, hours once I get going on Alzheimer's. It's hard to stop. But I thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. One last question. When did he come down with the Alzheimer's? Did you already have the bed and breakfast, or was that afterwards?
Yes, we had the bed and breakfast.
How convenient. So you did the bed and breakfast for caregivers, or you just decided to add the caregivers?
I added the caregivers after he passed away.
Oh, that's a great idea.
After he passed away, yep.
So, and he was able to benefit from it. Awesome.
Yes.
Meg, thank you again for coming on the show. We appreciate it. And I just want to remind everyone we're here every Tuesday at noon Pacific time because we are on the West Coast. And just go to Caregivers Caregiver because all our shows, including this one, become recorded podcasts and videocasts. Just go to caregiverscaregiver.com and you'll see the uplifting interview tab. And remember to take our quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout?, to assess where you are in the burnout process, and to get your free copy of my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, a $10 value, absolutely free. Why? Just because I'm a nice guy. So until next week, noon Pacific, may God richly bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani. Join Dave every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific, or catch the program anytime 24/7 right here on Radio Star Worldwide.